Okay.
This is a lot for me. You want me to press this?
No.
You want me to press this?
When it's ready?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Adonai Sivasai Tiftach Ofi Agiti Asecha. I apologize if there aren't enough or there are too many source sheets. This is a new forum for us. This is very nice. I like it. I'm used to standing. I'm used to stender, but I got like a whole desk. Yeah, get spread out a little. Bruchim Abayim. A Jew has to live with the times. A Jew has to live with the times. For us, what that means is that we have to learn how to live with the ebb and the flow of the Jewish calendar. That's what it means to live with the times. It doesn't mean to have the latest shoes, Toms, what they're called. Notice the girls eat a lot, the boys. It doesn't mean to have the latest version of the iPod. It means to live with the times, to live with the Jewish times, to live with the calendar. The Bein HaMitzarim, which is that narrow, confined, constricted space which we find ourselves in, we really find ourselves. Normally we enter it in camp, but here it started before camp, and we're kind of just dropped off in the middle of the Bein HaMitzarim, in a place where it's almost impossible to feel Baruch Hashem, because we're already in the Imus Mashiach here in Camp Hass. There's music, there's dancing, there's smiling, there's laughing. It's very, very hard to feel that confinement, that narrowing of the vision, focusing, refocusing ourselves on some of the things that we maybe have long ago forgotten. There's a mashal from Rabbi Nachman, it's the first source, that I must have studied at least a dozen times, if not more. But when you read it against the backdrop of this entire Bein HaMitzarim that we just talked about, it kind of catches our attention in a brand new way. Rabbi Nachman says in Sichos HaRan, "Hayetzer hara doma kemo misha holech v'ratz bein bnei adam." The Yetzer hara is like, he doesn't say it's a little kid, but in my head it's a little kid, who's running amongst his friends, back and forth. V'yado sagura, his hand is clenched, his hand is closed. V'in adam yodei amah b'tocha, nobody knows what's inside of his hand. V'hu marma b'nei adam, and he's tricking people. V'shoel l'kol echad, he asks every single one of them, "Mani ochiz, what am I holding in my hand? What is this?" V'l'kol echad nidma ki'ilu hu ochiz mashu misave. And for all the little kids in the playground, they're all looking at this, you know, maybe a little slightly older boy's clenched fist, and they're saying, "I wonder what's in there, you know? Could it be a sucking candy? Could it be a dollar? Could it be $10? And each one is imagining some great pleasure, some great taiva that he has. Valkena called Ratzim Akharov. So he says, "You know, what's in my hand?" And then he runs in the opposite direction, and everyone starts running after him. Every single one of them thinks he has in his hand exactly what I want, exactly what's going to make me happy. And afterwards he opens his hand. He opens the hand. There's nothing inside of it. Kimokein mamish, exactly like this. Hayitzahara hu marma kola olam. The entire world is being made crazy by this Yitzahara. The kol ratzim achar, everyone's running after him. Marma kol echad. Every single person thinks, "Oof, if I could only get that next thing, if I could only have that one more thing, then I'll truly have exactly what I desire." Until finally we run and run and run after the Yetzer Hara until it's too late, and he opens his hands and he says, "Gotcha. and there's nothing inside. And we chased and chased and chased and spent years of our lives chasing after a figment of our own imagination, after an empty promise of the Yetzer Hara. I was reading this recently and I was thinking, this proverbial squeezing of the hand that Rabbi Nachman is talking about, can it be that the Bein HaMitzarim, a little bit of a new way of understanding these days of the Bein HaMitzarim, that narrow, confined, constricted space, is that the Yetzer Hara, during this time, during the time of the Bein HaMitzarim, what it means in the narrow place, in that narrow, confined place, what that means is that the Yetzer Hara is squeezing just a little bit tighter. He is squeezing on us. He's squeezing the whole world. And therefore the whole world is being flung into the state of din, of harsh judgment. Chesed seems to be missing from our lives. There seems to be, at least in most places in the world, we stop listening to music in a certain way. We stop hanging out in a certain way. We start talking in a certain way. We start thinking in a certain way as we're getting closer to Rosh Chodesh Av. And our minds start going towards that day which everybody dreads, the day of Tisha B'Av, not so much because of the fasting, hopefully, at this point in our lives, but because of what it means and what that represents and what happened, not just what it represents, but what it is in the Jewish calendar. He's squeezing tighter and he's insisting, there really is something in my hand. See, during the rest of the year, he's doing this. He's squeezing his hand and we're looking. And eventually he opens up the hand and he says, there's nothing in. But by the Bein HaMitzarim, I'd like to suggest, and this is just the way that I'm understanding it now, and we have to always learn the Torah the way that we're understanding it at that moment. What it means, the Bein HaMitzarim, is means that that confine, that constriction of the Yetzer Hara, squeezing the hand tighter. Why is he doing that? So everybody knows that if you have something precious in your hand, you want to guard it, you hold it tightly. And during this time period, the Yetzer Hara is holding tightly, and he's saying, no, there really is something. I promise you there's something in there. I promise if you chase just a little bit more, you'll really find that there's something worthwhile in my hand. But it's not true. A while back, I read a book by a Harvard psychologist. His name is Daniel Gilbert. He wrote a book called Stumbling into Happiness. And he made infamous and already famous Lexus ad from a number of years ago. The ad went something like this. It said, anybody who says money can't buy happiness just isn't spending it right. Lexus. Buy a Lexus and you'll be happy. If you're not happy with if money is not buying you happiness, just because you didn't buy a Lexus yet. Once you get the Lexus, you'll for sure be happy. Once you get that next thing that's gonna that just a little bit of a bigger house, a little bit more of a comfortable car, just another pair of shoes, another shirt, another pair of pants, another gadget, another something, another safer even, then you'll be happy. Then you'll be happy. He developed an entire philosophy of psychology called miswanting. You know what that means, miswanting? It means that he studied and did tests to show that human beings don't understand what makes them happy. They think that they want something, and it's really just another trick that they throw holding tightly. He's holding his fist tighter and tighter and tighter, convincing you the whole time there's something worthwhile here. I think that's a new pshat in the Bein HaMitzarim. That we're finding ourselves in this time period where it's a little bit easier during these summer months, during these 3 weeks, the middle, the heat of the summer months, where it's just a little bit easier to let our guard down. I think it's for this reason that in source number 2 and 3 you find that Chazal established already a long, long time ago, it's quoted already in the Torah from the Gaonim, Nogim ba'ashkenaz lomar pirkei avos ba'mincha. And Rav Amram Gon writes from the Gonim, and by the Svardim they do it by Shachris. But Kuli Alma Lo Pligi, that during this time period of the summer months, we read Pirkei Avos. Why is that? Why is there this heightened study of Pirkei Avos during this time, specifically on Shabbos and in general? So in the Talmud and Hagman, source number 3, it's explained, Mefisha Eis Hahiz Man Tanugim Bnei Otam. This is the time period where generally the pleasures of human beings, you know, that carefree summer atmosphere that every person knows all too well, is that squeezing. Well, that's just a manifestation of the tight squeeze of the Yetzer Hara saying, there's something in my hand. If you just look a little bit more carefully, if you just continue to acquire more and more things, wealth, popularity, then you'll be happy. And the whole thing's a lie. Source number 5, the Yitzhar might be called a fool, but he's certainly not a fool. The Pasuk tells us, Shlomo Melech tells us in Koheles, Tov yeled maskein v'chacham, mimelech zakein uksil, asher lo yadal lihizayer od. Better is a small child who is weak but wise than a melech zakein uksil, than a foolish old king. Rashi tells us, who's the foolish old king? Well, there's a king who rules over the human being, and who's called a Zakin because he comes into the body right when a person is born, as opposed to the Yetzer Tov, who only comes in at the age of 12 and 13. But why is he called a fool? We don't normally think of the Yetzer, we normally think of the Yetzer as very crafty. So Rashi tells us in source number 6, the last line, Uksil, Shemeto Baderech Ra, Kach Nidrash V'Medrash. You know what it means? It means he's called a fool, not because he is a fool, because that's his job. He is a fool. He is one who fools. That's what he does. The Yetzer Hara's job is to trick and to promise us and swear to us that there's going to be something worthwhile and at the end to leave us hanging. The Baal Shem Tov is a teaching which explains to us that it's not just the Yetzer Hara's job. It's not just that his job is to be a fool, one who fools. But it's a hobby. He's an artist. He's a painter. The Gemara says in Shabbos, in a little bit of a different context, the Gemara says, Hashochet, a person, let's move now to the realm of Hilchos Shabbos for a second, and the Baal Shem Tov will take us back into the world of Yetzer Hara. Hashochet, somebody who does Shechita on Shabbos, Mipnei Ma Mechayev. What is he Chayev for? What Malacha did he do when he does Shechita on Shabbos? So Rav Omer, Rav says, Mishum Tzoveya. Shmuel Omer, Mishum Netilas Nesham. Rav says he's chayev because he did tzoveya. How did he do tzoveya? Because, I'm sorry to get a little gruesome for a second, but when a person does shechita, so the blood that comes out of the animal colors the skin of the animal by the area of the neck. It's tzoveya, says Rav. Shmuel says it's netilas neshama. It's taking a life, which is also one of the avos malachos. Tosfos says something very strange. Take a look in source number 18. Lav ashachet demas nisan kahi. We're not talking about regular shechita like was discussed in the Mishnah on Shabbos. That would pshita, because that's obvious. Of course, if you kshecht, so then, of course you're taking in a shama. Of course that's netilas neshama. That's obvious. Because then you wouldn't have to say netilas neshama. It's tzoveya tnan. Behedim as nisan, ela shachot da'al makai. Says Tosfos, you know what we're talking about? Shachot da'al makai. Talking about what probably means in the pashat pshat in the context, someone who, you're not doing shechita in the technical sense of the word, like a shochet, you know, a ritual slaughter. Someone who does shechita, who kills, like, haphazardly. But Baal Shem Tov says, look deeper. Tosfos here on a deeper level is telling us a very deep thing. What does it mean, the shachat da'alma? What does it mean, shachat da'alma? So we just explained, it means, da'alma kind of means like, in the word, like, stam shechita. But Baal Shem Tov says, that's not what it means. Who's the shachat da'alma? Who's the one who shechts the world? Who's the one who's responsible, who's not only, like the Gemara says in Bava Basra, he's not only the Yetzer Hara, but he's also the Satan, he's also the Malach HaMavnes? So I just told you who it is. The shachat da'alma is the Yetzer Hara, and the Baal Shem Tov says in source number 9. This is quoted in the name of Baal Shem Tov. Shamati mimori perish ha'shasa shochit da'alma chai mishum tzoveya. One says because of Netzilas Hashama. And the Baal Shem Tov explained, you know why it calls? It says, what is the shachat da'alma chayev for? What did he do? What was his malacha that he did here? So Rav said, what did he do? He did tzoveya. What does it mean, tzoveya? Tzoveya means to color. It means to paint. You know, we even say that in English, right? When somebody is kind of telling something that's not true, he's like coloring his words. That's what the Yetzer Hara does. The Yetzer Hara is a painter. He paints us this beautiful picture, and as we get closer and closer, we're more and more convinced that it's real until we get close, and we knock on it, and it turns out it's hollow. The whole thing is empty. This time period of the Bein HaMetzarim, when we're reading Pirkei Avos on Shabbos, and when the Yetzer Hara is, like I keep saying, clenching his fist ever so tightly, is the biggest sakana, it's the biggest time when a person could, chas v'shalom, run after and chase after these hollow images that the Yetzer Hara is trying to put before our very eyes. It turns out that the Yetzer Hara is doing a very good job. I quoted one study, I'll quote one other. There was a study done, it was already a number of years ago, I can only imagine what it is right now. I don't think you have to imagine, I think we all know well for ourselves. There was a study done a number of years ago, I think it was done in 1998, because that's when the numbers are from, in UCLA. A study was done in UCLA, asking people who were coming into UCLA to do a survey, asking people, why were they in college? And there was a survey, it was multiple choice, it wasn't like essays. An unbelievable statistic, which I don't know by heart, is that in 1965, when they first did this study, a long time ago, before this more recent study, 82% of people who came into college said they were trying to develop a meaningful philosophy of life. Versus the other leftover percentage who said that they were just trying to find some way to be well off financially. Fast forward to 1998 when they did this new study, and only 35% of people are trying to find meaning in life, while the other percent, some 65%, are just trying to make a living. Yetzer is doing a good job at convincing us that somehow financial success, buying a Lexus, like I said in the beginning, is somehow going to make a person happy, when in reality, the world is just whispering these empty lies in our direction. It's a painful truth, but in source number 10, we have from the Mesillas Yesharim. The Mesillas Yesharim, as everybody here knows, I'm sure, is a collection of thoughts from the great Kabbalist, Halachist, playwright, and Jew, the Ramchal. The Ramchal wrote the Mesillas Yesharim, and the Vilna Gaon said that this was his greatest work of Kabbalah, even though, if anyone's ever read it, it doesn't read like a work of Kabbalah. And the Vilna Gaon said that he would go and he would crawl on his hands and knees to go sit by the feet of the Ramchal if he could. They weren't allowed at the same time. At the same time, the Ramchal writes in the Hakdama that he's not saying anything new. And everything we're about to say, we already know. But it's kedai to remind ourselves again, like the Ramchal says, because it's the pasha things that we forget. But the painful truth is that when we try to substitute, when we try to substitute physicality and pleasures of this world to somehow create a wholeness inside of us, so then we would do well to apply the saying that God created inside of a person a God-shaped hole. And no matter what you try to fill it with, you know, I think all the time, it's like watching my daughter trying to do one of those puzzles, or like one of the, you have like those circle things that they have, there's like a triangle shape, and there's a circle shape, and and you can't put the wrong one into the wrong hole. And that's what we're doing our whole lives. We keep trying to fill up that puzzle piece with shapes and things which are either too small or too big and don't fit. And the only thing which is supposed to fit is the chilak elokam imal that we have, which is screaming, that has this little empty hole there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just waiting for us to fill it with godliness. The Mesillas Yesharim explains to us, we already know this, but in source number 10, Hinei HaDerech HaMuvchar Liknos HaSaprishos Hu. A person wants to be able to separate himself from this world, and I know it's a little bit of a heavy thing that we've been saying all along, but we'll come around. Sheyistakel Adam B'Greyos Tanugim Olam HaZeh. If a person just takes a moment, which is what we're doing right now, that's the whole purpose of this meeting together. If a person just takes a moment to look at the physical pleasures of this world, and to look at how garua they are, and how small they are, and how insignificant they are, U'Prisosa Mitzar Atzmam, how invaluable, how not valuable, rather, sorry, they are on their own right. V'aros ha'gedolos shebikiros l'holim mehem, and how much bad can come from those things, then a person will instantly start to distance himself from those wrong puzzle pieces which are trying to fill the wrong spots. Skip down to the second paragraph, and this is the line that I really wanted to see, because we all know it's true, and yet we can't help ourselves. Hinei tanug hamacha. Let's take what, according to modern understanding, is the greatest pleasure that human beings cannot live without. If you would ask a person, what's the one thing that you can't live without, before any of the other pleasures, they would say food. Hinei tanug hamachal hu ha-yoser muchash u-murgash. It's the most physical, it's the most sensual of all the pleasures. Is there anything more foolish and more silly? Again, we're obviously he's talking here if we're not doing it in a Torahic way. And we'll turn this around in a few minutes, and we'll explain how really the physical world is not a bad thing. The world is not an empty, dark, horrible place. We just have to know how to use it properly. But when we use it in the way that we're accustomed to using it without thinking, is there anything more ridiculous than eating? Harei ein shiuro el kishir beis habliya kiven shiatz v'men of yard b'nei me'ayim avad zichro v'nishkach kilo lo haya. When a person puts food in their mouth, right? So what's the What's the pleasure center? What's the moment of impact that food is going to make? So the Ramchal says it's the amount of measurable space between your lips and here. That's it. This is the whole pleasure of eating, right here. Once it passes from here, before it's here, you just want it, you don't have it. And once it's here, it's already gone, and it's ki'ilu lo haya, he says, like it never happened. So the whole pleasure of eating takes place right here. That's it. The whole thing is right here. It's about half a second, right? Sometimes 3-4 seconds if you have to chew it. And that's the whole thing. And yet somehow the entire world is chasing after this pleasure, and we have infinite cooking channel, you know, specials, and we have a million cookbooks, and everyone's trying to make this thing. And he goes on to say, again, we're not used to this type of thinking, but he says, is there really any difference between a person who his whole life satiates himself with all types of delicacies, and at the end of his life he doesn't have something, and he's still left with that same taiva, versus a person whose entire life he just ate black bread, and he's able to sustain himself like that? I'm not saying we have to do that. I'm saying we have to resensitize ourselves to what the physical world is really all about. Even more painful, it's called the painful truth, this section of the share. Even more painful, maybe, is to read what the Gesher HaChaim wrote. The Gesher HaChaim is a three-part sefer, which is really the first two parts are on Hilchos Avelos, technical halachos of death and burial and mourning. The third chilek is Machshava. Fantastic reading. It's in English. You can get it in English. It's been translated into English, and it's such an important book. It's an important book to read whether you have struggles in your life with someone who passed away, or you have some sort of... It's important for anyone to read. It's important for a person who's never thought about death in their life to read. It totally reframes your entire life. The Gesher HaChaim writes in the second parak of the third chelek, Ha'adam ochel v'shosef v'meshach kol shana lo pachos min elef kilogram. Person eats no less than 1,000 kilograms every year. Listen to this, this is a wild cheshbon. Person eats 1,000 kilograms at least every year. Zos omeres, that means ton echad, 1 ton. Person eats a ton of food, literally. 1 ton of food every single year. B'meshach me'ah shana, everyone here should be blessed to live 100 years. He says, you live 100 years, right? If you're zochah to live that long, a person eats and drinks his entire life. Lo pachos mimei elef kilogram. A person eats 100,000 kilograms, which is 100 tons of food. Umishkalo la'achron of misasa lamarva asiras ton. Hotzi hotzos alachilasa v'shtiasa v'shanosa halu lo pachos mi. And again, this is going back many years ago, so you'll have to update the amount of money that he says here. But it's you're spending no less over your life than $50,000 on food. $50,000, that's a lot of money, and it's a lot more than that today, right? $50,000 on food. Umashav v'achrona, and what's left over after putting $50,000 of work into this body? Lo klum. Nothing. Ilu gam ifridu gav yasol l'chamarav. If a person would do some sort of analysis of the body after we leave the world, after Me'ah V'Esrim Shana, and he would do an analysis of the body, and he would separate HaBarzel, the iron, Hasid, HaYud, HaBrom, HaAshlag, all these different things, the bromine and the iodine, he would separate all the different chemicals that you could take out of the body after it's done. What's it worth? 50 to 60 cents. That's it. That's what the body's worth after all of that. V'Hotzas HaFrada. And just the money that you have to pay to do this test, he's making a little bit of a joke here, just the money you have to pay to do this test would be hundreds of dollars, so it's not even worth it in the end to take the 60 cents that you're going to be worth. So it can't be. So there's two ways of looking at this. One way of looking at it is to say, this is a very dark, horrible world that Akash Baruch has put us in. The other way to look at it is to say that there must be, if this is all true what we're saying, then there has to be something that we're missing. There has to be that there's the clenching fist of the Yetzer Hara, but at the same time, everything around that space of the Yetzer Hara, there's something real. Even though the whole world looks like there's nothing, and there's nothing, and that's what we've been saying the whole time, the only conclusion that we can come to after all that is that, so then what are we doing here? The conclusion is that we have a neshama. And that neshama is lenetzach. Whereas the space between your lips and your throat is the pleasure center of eating, the neshama is lenetzach netzach. It begins when a person is born, and until the person leaves this world, he's making indelible marks on his neshama, which will last lenetzach etzav, until the end of time and beyond. So a person has to make a cheshbon. And we mentioned before that there's a custom to study Pirkei Avos in this time. So let's study a little bit Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Rabbi Yaakov Omer, familiar, celebrated Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, everybody knows this Mishnah. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Ha'olam Azeh Doma L'Prazdor B'fnei Olam Haba. This world is like a prazdor, is like a hallway that leads to Olam Haba. And a person should prepare himself in this hallway so that he'll be able to enter into the big ballroom in Olam Haba. Yud Zayin. Hu haya omer yafa sha'achas v'tshuva ma'isim tovim b'olam haza mikol chay olam haba v'yafa sha'achas shal koras ruach b'olam haba mikol chay olam haza. I want to talk about this last sentence for a second. Maybe you heard this before, maybe you didn't hear it, but either way, like we said before, you have to review these types of things. The Mishnah says that all of the pleasure in this world does not equal one moment of koras ruach b'olam haba. Yafa sha'achas, it's better, 1 second in Olam Haba of Koras Ruach, we have to see what that is better than Kol Chai Olam Haba, than Kol Chai Olam Haza, the entirety of this entire universe, this entire world, the cosmos. So Rav Dessler quotes a teaching from his Rebbe. He says, you know what that means? All of the pleasure of this world compared to the next world? He said, if you want to make the cheshbon, the calculation properly, you have to do the following. Picture every single pleasure that you ever had in your entire life up till now, every pleasure that you ever had until this point in your life, and all of those, you would compact all of those into 1 second, and you would try to experience that all in 1 second, you would all go crazy, right? You'd go crazy. But if you tried to do that, that wouldn't even be infinitesimal. That would be nothing compared to 1 second in Olam Haba. But he says, that's not enough. That's not called Kol Chai Olam Haba. Kol Chai Olam Haza, I'm sorry. In order to do that, you have to take all of the pleasure ever experienced by every single person in this entire room and put it together. Every pleasure that every single person sitting here has ever had. And not only in here, but out there also. And not only out there, but the entire state of New York. And not only there, but all of the United States. And not only that, but the entire world right now. You have to take every pleasure that every single person ever had and put that all into 1 second and try to experience that. Doesn't compare to 1 second in Olam Haba. But it's more than that. Because it's not just everyone alive now, it's anyone who ever lived and anyone who ever will live. Put that all together and try to experience that in 1 single second. And Rav Dessler says, it's kedai to read this inside, but we're not going to have time. In source number 13, 1 second in Olam Haba is infinitely better than all of that pleasure put together. But then he says one last thing. He says, all of that, is not even compared to Olam Haba itself. It's compared to Koras Ruach. You know what Koras Ruach means? Koras Ruach, he explains, is like when a person goes to Duggies, right? And that, some people like it, some people don't like it, but it's like that first thing you walk into a restaurant that you like, right? And you walk in there and you smell the smell of that food. It's before you, it's not even the pleasure of eating it, it's the pleasure of like that, just like the wafting smell that like passes by you. So Rav Dessler says, you know what it means in the Mishnah? It says, one moment of Koras Ruach in Olam Haba. Not even Olam Haba itself. Just like one moment of smelling like the scent of Olam Haba in the distance is already better than the entirety of this world. What's that?
It's like a Hakdama?
What Hakdama?
It's like a Hakdama to Olam Haba?
Yeah, just the Hakdama to Olam Haba. Exactly. Just the Hakdama to Olam Haba. Just that smell that like, oh, it's coming up in the distance. That's already much better than this world. It's there. It's real. See, in our minds, we think that this is the real world. This is how we've grown up. Not because of our families. This is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us on purpose. He created us so that we see that this world seems like the real world. This is the tangible. I can touch things here. I can see things. I can experience them with my 5 senses. But if a person is not careful with his 5 senses, so then it can very easily bring him to a lot of nonsenses. Your 5 senses can trick you. Your 5 senses can make you think that you're looking at something which is real and it's really not real. And our job is to try as best we can, and the more that we can, the better we will be off. To reorient ourselves to see that the ikkar is what we think of as that kind of like fantasy world up there, and that the tafel, if even that, is this world. For this world's sake. Part of the 3 weeks is obviously trying to get back to that space of Eretz Yisrael. Many of you know that my wife and I had the great schus, and we still can't even really believe it, to move to Eretz Yisrael this past summer. And we're still very much trying to find our place there and find our way. But there's something about living in Eretz Yisrael which gives a person eyes to see in a proper way. Before we moved, I remember having a conversation with a dear family friend, and I asked him, I said, what's, you know, if you had to, like, because they lived in Eretz Yisrael and we didn't, and we very much wanted to, and we were very jealous of them. So I asked him, I said, what's, if you had to, like, summarize the difference between life in Eretz Yisrael versus life in America, how would you like, say that in one sentence? He said, simple. He said, I think about this all the time. He said, it happened to have been in America at the time. He said, I think about this all the time. He said, in America, life is this thick. It stops here. He said, in Eretz Yisrael, everything has layers of depth. A person sends their kids to school in Eretz Yisrael, it's not hopefully a reality, at least not always, but there's this kind of funny feeling in the back of your mind, like, I live in a very dangerous place. You're like, who knows what could be? And you don't live life like that. A person has a job in Eretz Yisrael, it's not the same thing as having a job in America. And it's like that on purpose, you know, like the Torah, and I'm not, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not making a comparison like this, but you know how the Torah describes the difference between the way that Mitzrayim gets watered versus the way that Eretz Yisrael gets watered? It's like the Nile just automatically overflows and everything is good, and there's like Costco and everything, right? And then in Eretz Yisrael, it's like if it doesn't rain, everyone's in big trouble. There's just this different, and it's thousands of years of this that's creating a culture in Eretz Yisrael of people living with an eye towards the next world. It's an amazing thing. Part of what we're trying to do during this time period is to get back, and that's why it's so important. Much more important than when we're in an environment where everything is, you know, the dinim and the halachos of the 3 weeks are kind of in our face. Here it's not. Here it's the opposite. So it's so important that we kind of remind ourselves that what we're doing now during these Bein HaMitzarim is trying to get back to that Eretz Yisrael mentality. Not every single person can get to Eretz Yisrael right at this moment. It's not necessarily in the next year, 2 years, 3 years plan, whatever it is. But trying to get back to that Eretz Yisrael mentality, that state of mind, the way of looking at the world, the Eretz Yisrael dick way of looking at the world, so we can eventually get back there actually geographically, is so important. What does it mean to have an Eretz Yisrael dick way of mind? So take a look at this is unbelievable. There was a tzaddik named Rav Shem Klingberg. He was murdered in the Holocaust by the Nazis. We have almost nothing of his writings left. We have a small little kuntres like the one I knocked off the shelf before. That's like about this big. This is not it. But it's something like this. This is all that's left of his Torah. He was a gon olam. He had hundreds and hundreds of svarim probably ready to print. They were all destroyed by the Nazis in addition to him. One of the things that we do have is a small little pamphlet called Ohalei Shem. He says an amazing thing. If you look in the Mishnah, look in the Torah Shebaal Peh, you find that Eretz Yisrael has four natural borders. Three land borders and one water border. What are they? You look in source number 19. Rav Yehuda Omer, Mirekim leMizrach, Virekim kiMizrach. It's describing what are the borders of Eretz Yisrael. From Rekem, from this place called Rekem, into the east, going inward towards Eretz Yisrael. That's all part of Eretz Yisrael. May Ashkelon leDarom, from Ashkelon and to the south. So that's also Eretz Yisrael, Ashkelon kiDarom, and that's also included. May Akko leTzafon, from Akko to the north, and Akko is also part of the north. That's also part of Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Meir Omer, Akko keEretz Yisrael leGitin. It's only Akko is only considered part of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. For Gittin, it's not for everything. Rashi explains that there's actually one other border. Every place has to have four borders at least. What's the fourth border of Eretz Yisrael? So he explains it's the Yam. Right, you look at a map, you see there's Ashkelon is all the way down here, right? You could see all the different parts of Eretz Yisrael. You see that those are the four borders of Eretz Yisrael. Says Rav Shem Klingberg, he's really talking about sukkahs. He's talking about a sukkah is a diras arai. And the diras arai of sukkahs is a little bit like Eretz Yisrael. That's why we say that when a person goes to a sukkah, it's a little bit like going to Eretz Yisrael, so it says in this farm. But take a look at his words. Unbelievable. Ulechein afsika halacha shasukah hi diras arai note dalet gvulei Eretz Yisrael because of this connection between Sukkot and Eretz Yisrael, we say it's called the Diras Arayim, but take a look. The four borders of Eretz Yisrael are Ashkelon, Rechem, Akko, and Yam. Ashkelon, Rechem, Akko, and Yam. Rosh Tevos, Arai. Temporary. What's the pshat for us? We're not holding by Sukkot right now. The pshat is that Eretz Yisrael, in an Eretz Yisrael way of thinking, is Arai. What's Arai? Arai means temporary. Eretz Yisrael is whispering into our ears. Eretz Yisrael is calling us and saying, this world is temporary. But it's also beautiful. And it's amazing. This temporary world, like the Vilna Gaon crying on his deathbed because he didn't know that he didn't know how many more seconds he's going to have to fulfill the mitzvah tzitzis in his life. Like a person who's just yearning for one more time to light Shabbos candles before they leave the world. Because every single second in this world is temporary, but it also has the capability, has the potential to be infinite. If a person just uses it properly. If a person allows himself to take the pleasures of this world and have them overcome who they are and how they think and what they do and what their goals are in life. If their goals is just to own the next thing or to eat the next thing or to have them, whatever it is. So then we're not allowing ourselves to experience the nitzchias, the eternal pleasure that a person can get from this world also. See, the first half of the shiur describing this dark, dreary, exiled view of the world, where everything is horrible and everything is worthless and we're only worth 60 cents after putting in thousands and thousands of dollars into our bodies. And that's true, but it's only to help us to understand that this world also has another component, which is called the neshama. And that neshama, when we take care of it, when we pay attention to it, when we listen to it carefully, because it doesn't scream as loud as the body does. The body is much better at telling us what it wants and what it needs. A person doesn't go, a few hours without, like we spoke a week ago or so, some of us had a shiur together. The body doesn't go a few hours without letting you know that it's hungry. The soul will let you go for days without knowing that you didn't daven yet, you didn't learn yet, properly. Because the neshama speaks very softly, but if a person pays attention carefully, if a person listens to the whispers of existence, then a person is able to tap in to the beauty that's there. The nitzchis, which is hiding within this arai, this temporary world. That's an Eretz Yisrael dikkei existence. When we don't do that, when we focus instead on the physical, when we focus on the temporary, so then we get what it says in the Pasuk in Eicha. It says, Golsa Yehuda me'oni, mirov avoda hi ashva bagoyim, lo matzama noach korot fei yisigo abeina mitzar. These words, as seen through the eyes of Rav Shimshon David Pinkus, are like a dagger to the heart. Golsa Yehuda Me'ani. The Jewish people, we were exiled from this way of thinking about Eretz Yisrael and from being physically in Eretz Yisrael. Me'anias HaTorah, Anias B'yiras Shamayim, Anias B'tfila. From poverty, being impoverished of Torah, being impoverished of Yiras Shamayim. Being impoverished in the world of Tefila. V'lo Zos B'lavad, not only have we become impoverished in the realm of things which are important, Gam Mirov Avoda, from hours and hours of work of running after the Yetzer Hara with his closed fist chasing him. Just a few more hours trying to get ahead. Hi Ashva B'Goyim. We're not thinking like Jews, we're not thinking like Eretz Yisrael D'Kiyidin. And therefore, Lo Matzah Manoach. We don't find rest in this world. It's a paradox, right? Meaning, if a person chases after this world and the arai of this world, they end up empty. They end up with that hole because they didn't fit the right puzzle piece in. But when a person focuses on Torah, Yirah Shamayim, on Tefillah, when a person focuses on the things that are real, the things that are yesh, that are amiti, so then there is menucha. Paradoxically, there is rest. A person does feel good. A person does feel satisfied. Person feels full. The world is whispering a beautiful, beautiful song. And nobody could capture it quite the way that Rav Kook did. The first time I heard this poem, I was brought very, very quickly to tears. And I'll try to do my best to read it without them, so that I'll be able to get through it. But if we want to summarize everything that we said, I think we just need to read the words of Rav Kook. Rav Kook, in one of his beautiful poems, is translated into English, The Whispers of Existence, which in many ways was the inspiration for this year. Rav Kook said, all existence whispers to me a secret. I have life to offer. Take it. Take it. If you have a heart, and in the heart red blood courses, which despair has not soiled. But if your heart is dull, and beauty holds no spell to you, existence whispers, leave me, leave, I am forbidden to you. If every gentle sound, every living beauty, stir you not to a holy song, but some alien thought, then leave me, leave, I am forbidden to you. And a generation will yet rise, and sing to beauty and to life, and draw delight unending from the dew of heaven. And a people returned to life will hear the wealth of life's secrets, from the vistas of the Carmel and the Sharon, and from the delight of song and life's beauty, a holy light will abound. And all existence will whisper, my beloved, I am permitted to you. End of the Maisa. And there were two brothers who looked at the world in a proper way. The names were Rav Elimelech of Lizhansky and the Rebbe of Zusha. Two brothers who were inseparable. And one time, as they were walking, Rav Zusha turned to his brother and he said, you know, everybody knows, it says in the holy books, in the Svarim HaKadoshim, that all of the neshamos, all of our neshamos were actually there inside of Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon contained all of the neshamos of all people who ever lived. He was a neshama koleles. So he said, I don't understand. If that's true, that means you and I were there also. He said, so how come when Adam was reaching to take the apple from it wasn't an apple, but ready to take the fruit from Chava, so why did we stop him? I don't get it. So the Rebbe Melech turned to Reb Zusha. He said, the truth is, he said, I'll tell you, they're different girsos, but this is, he said, the truth is, Reb Zusha, I remember. He said, I remember at that exact moment. And he said, my neshama was found, we don't even understand what this means, he said, my neshama was found in the hand of Adam HaRishon. And the entire body, listen to this, this is a Pella Atzum. The entire, everybody, the whole world, all people who ever existed were all screaming, don't do it. This is a bad idea. Abort. He said, but I had control over Adam HaRishon's hand. And the Rebbe, I mean, this is classic, the Rebbe Elimelech mouth, taking blame for himself. And he said, and I forced Adam HaRishon to take the fruit out of Chava's hand and to eat it. So Rebbe HaRishon said, Rebbe Melech, why did you do that? You brought all sickness, war, poverty, terror to the world that ever existed. Why did you do that? So Rebbe Melech said, he turned to his brother and he said, I'll tell you the truth. He said, I did it because I wanted the whole world to know that the snake was lying. I wanted everybody to know that the Nachash was, there was nothing in his hand the whole time. He was promising us that we ate from that fruit, we would have everything. We'd be gods, we'd create worlds, we'd be all-powerful and all-knowing. And I wanted the whole world to know forever that the Nachash is a liar, and it's not true. And that the world is whispering a beautiful, beautiful secret. And if we listen carefully to the secret of the world instead of listening to the whispers of the Nachash, who's telling us to look at every beautiful thing and to bring to that and to bring to our minds an alien thought, if we listen to the world instead, Sir Melech said it would be worthwhile to eat from the Eitz Hadas just so everyone should know that it's not true. And that people shouldn't be walking around their whole lives chasing after this silly boy in the schoolyard with his hands closed, making everyone chase him to figure out what's in his hand, what's really in there. Kadosh Baruch Hu should help us in the merit of trying to be ma'orer ourselves, to mechazik ourselves, to understand just a little bit what it means to look with eyes of Eretz Yisrael, what it means to look properly at the world, and to understand that God-shaped hole that is inside of every single person, and that merit of Kadosh Baruch Hu should help us, that we should be zocha to find all the right puzzle pieces, and to put them in their places, the proper bricks in their places, that Kadosh Baruch Hu will send down from Shemayim, that's hopefully an already built Beis HaMikdash b'mir minu amin b'amin. Shukrayach, thank you. If everyone could just take their chair. No, I think there's another chair.